Hello, world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 194. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Mike Dietrich. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you.
So, Mike, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
I'd like to think so, yes.
Good. We want to hear the whole story. Mike Dietrich is the best-selling author of Renew and Sustain and award-winning producer and filmmaker. As an environmental scientist and LEED accredited professional, that's Leadership, Energy, and Environmental Design, with over 12 years of experience in the sustainable development field, he has managed energy and environmental projects for a range of local and international organizations and corporations. That's a pithy summary of your career to date, Mike. Tell us what you're up to now that has you engaged and fascinated, if you will.
Yeah, right now I'm working with a company called McKissick & McKissick on a DC public school modernization. And what I've been able to do on this program over the last 3.5 years is really quantify sustainability, verify how we're designing the schools and the buildings that we're building. And I've updated the design guidelines, oversaw the construction, looked at the commissioning process. And then really what's been exciting is doing this optimization after the entire process is completed. That optimization is taking the building and improving the energy efficiency by an additional 20%. So we're maximizing all of the passive design and sustainable elements that we're putting into our buildings after construction.
Good heavens. I can imagine what over the last number of years, you've been doing this for a long time, what over the last number of years, just briefly, have been the biggest innovations in terms of energy conservation that you have used and others have used to make these buildings and these projects work a lot more better? 20% sounds like an amazing improvement, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, one of the elements that really has enabled us to have these accomplishments is something that we've had from the beginning of time and often don't do well, and that's communication. It is.
I love that.
But really, that is the crux of how we've been able to do this, is sitting down and having conversations with people, explaining to them what our goals and objectives are. And if we do X, Y, and Z, we can actually get there as long as you're on board with this. And when you talk to people and you have that conversation, you can actually then get that engagement.
Yes. So where have been the biggest breakthroughs in the obvious improvements to the building of buildings and the running of buildings? What have been the obvious things that just now in the last handful of years been put into play that you can share? Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I think technology is really improving. We're looking at innovation in insulation. We're looking at innovation in the HVAC technologies and improving efficiency. So all the components that go into the building, material resources, when we started tightening up the building envelopes back in the 70s because of the energy crisis, we didn't have enough of fresh air. We didn't understand the off-gassing of materials in our buildings. We were trying all these different material products. And so we've had a 20-year learning curve on how to make our buildings healthier and more efficient. And a lot of that has to do with the progress of technology and our understanding of the indoor environment.
Expand on that just a little bit.
Well, we as people spend 90% of our time indoors. And so there's volatile organic compounds, VOCs, formaldehydes, carbon dioxide levels. So a lot of that is from materials that we put into our spaces. CO2 is from ourselves. And if we don't have enough of a fresh air component, it creates for an unhealthy environment, which affects people's health. And they're lethargic, they don't produce as much. So having green buildings and healthier buildings actually is improving test scores in students. It's improving attendance. The same thing with workers in an office building. If you have a healthy green building that's energy efficient, as an owner, you reduce your costs by hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, which is extremely significant. And you end up not having as much lost time, so you have more product production from your employees. Mm-hmm. So there's this very win-win component when we're looking at the human element and how we interact with that environment.
Yeah, exactly. So you've learned all these modalities and different ways of engaging with buildings and making them more efficient and everything. And so is your role that you are a consultant that get brought in like you did with the DC Public School Modernization Project to work for a period of time to work on that project, then you move on, or how does that work?
Well, right now we're under duration of a contract for project management, construction management, oversight of the program. Okay. So that contract has a certain duration, and then it goes up through the entire procurement process through the district government. Okay. So during this process, I am an integral role on the sustainability front. So when I came in, sustainability was kind of new in the program. They've done energy efficiency measures, but I categorized it, I labeled it, I developed policies, I've started to implement programs, and then we've seen a lot of success on the individual projects.
How do you break this down, or how do you frame these issues for the audience that your book is appealing to?
So really, what I talk about in my book is sustainability, and what is it? Because every use of sustainability, the term morphs into something else. So I always talk about how it has the environmental component, which includes resources, it includes our impact on the environment, and also ecosystems, the urban ecosystem and the natural ecosystem. The other leg is the social aspect. There's a cultural aspect, how we engage with our spaces, how we engage with each other, health of people. And the third aspect of it is economic aspect of it, profitability, reducing cost, streamlining costs, making things make sense financially. So the book really balances those three legs and improves the efficiency to a point where we can get to net zero buildings. So the building is as so efficient that we can put solar or wind or some other renewable energy technology on site and produce as much energy as the building is consuming.
Wow.
And it's a fantastic concept. It's the next step in sustainability. It's the future. It's where we're going. I'm here at the Green Build conference right now in Washington, D.C., and that's the crux of the entire issue. And the best part about this is energy efficiency is creating jobs. Green tech is the largest growing field that we have right now. It's improving jobs in agriculture. It's improving jobs in technology with building thermostats, building automation systems. Running those buildings is becoming building science, which is producing other jobs in the tech world. And so there's this huge opportunity for us through sustainability to have a multi-trillion-dollar emerging market and to be part of that.
Well, why wouldn't a company, an organization that's brick and mortar, just embrace this just right off the bat? What are the political hurdles you have to get through, or the perception hurdles, or the lethargy hurdles you have to get through? Because it seems like it's so obvious. It's such a win-win-win.
Well, it is very obvious. And if you look at any large company or corporation in the world today, they are incorporating sustainability. They are building their buildings in a way that reduce their operating costs. Look at Coke, and during the recession, they decided to reduce the amount of plastic in their bottles by 30%. They did this and to increase profitability in a time where they couldn't raise the cost of their product, but they could reduce the cost of their resources. And by reducing those resources, they ended up being able to market it. There is some resistance because certain organizations are always entrenched and have really strong lobby groups.
Yes.
So they inject the idea that there's a conversation about something when there really isn't. They tout different products that have been around for 100+ years. But part of life is change and evolution. And so as we go through this change and evolution, certain industries close and other ones open. So there's always this opportunity to morph into something else, something better.
Yes, makes complete sense. Well, as you know, and as we've discussed, everyone's life journey is composed of a series of turning points, some call them passages. And at these important times, we're each faced with obstacles and opportunities and choices that determine the course of the next 5 to 7 years of our lives. Would you take a minute and share with our listeners some of the more memorable and impactful defining moments that have forged the life of Mike Dietrich?
Well, I can go way back to, I'm an Eagle Scout, and I actually worked at Boy Scout camp and teaching other scouts how to look at the environment. And having that opportunity with the Boy Scouts taught me a lot of the leadership skills, how to work with people, how to work with organizations to change things from the inside as opposed to yelling with a sign outside. Mm-hmm. Not saying that activism doesn't have its role, but I'm not an activist. I'd rather work with the players inside the organization to inject real change and see the things that I've seen happen on projects. So that was kind of like the first metamorphosis, was being part of the Boy Scouts. The second big change for me was I always wanted to be a scientist. So I went to school for environmental science and I took a hold of every opportunity that came my way. So I went down between my freshman and sophomore year with the dean and did a research project in a sulfur cave down in Mexico, Cueva de Villaluz. I published a paper about how cave-adapted or trigonomorphy in those cave fish. And the thing that I noticed was we're impacting the environment. This cave ecosystem is being impacted by deforestation and a growing population and the resources it needs from the ecosystem. That echoed again when I had a National Science Foundation at the end of my bachelor's degree, and I was working in the upland Adirondack watershed in upstate New York. And I was looking at management's effects on those ecosystems. And everything I was doing in science was echoing the fact that humans were having impact on it. I didn't know what to do. I drove across the country. I cleared my head. I ended up working for the construction industry, which then fell out. And when that fell out, I said, I can't be dependent on somebody else to earn a living. I need to figure out a way that I can balance this built environment that we're building with the science that I know and the environmental aspects that I know. And I started my own business.
Let me ask you a question. This is great, Mike. You got your, when you did the early work, that was your undergraduate degree. So that's where you have when you went into upstate New York and worked in the cave, or well, you did the environmental science project in Mexico and then you went to the,
right.
Okay. So that was all with your undergraduate degree, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I ended up working in the construction industry in order to earn a living.
Yeah, what was
it
that?
It was great because I got to see the other side of the fence.
Yeah, what did the other side of the fence look like?
I mean, well, we were building McMansions, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
We were building these huge spaces, extremely energy efficient, trying to turn a profit as quickly as possible. Poor lighting layout, poor design layout. And they ended up being huge energy hogs. But I was also looking at the stormwater management infrastructure, the water infrastructure, the electrical infrastructure. Why are we building all these curbs and gutters when old roads used to just let all the water flow off onto the side and absorb back into the earth? We started building all these structured systems which don't work with the environment.
Mm-hmm. So these were literally McMansions for individuals, or they were buildings that you characterize as McMansions? These were office buildings?
These were residential homes,
okay,
predominantly. Yeah.
Okay, so you watched it from that perspective and thought, not very efficient. And you must have had a bunch of ideas while you were in the middle of that niche, right?
Yeah, I did, but I wasn't able to carry through on a lot of it. I was trying to survive at that point. But really kind of the next phase that really affected me was I started my own business and I started doing like environmentally friendly salvage. So during an insurance loss or real estate agents were cleaning out houses to try to sell them, I was diverting all of that waste from the landfill. And then a professor from my alma mater worked in Africa and Kenya half the year and half the year at Plattsburgh University. So I ended up going over in the summer of 2007 to Africa. And I was doing environmental impact assessments with Moi University and for the Kenyan government, looking at industry in terms of agriculture, transportation, textiles. We were looking at energy and mining and how the environment was being impacted. And through that process, I also got to look at biogas situations. I got to look at ecotourism. And so my real epiphany happened while I was climbing Kilimanjaro, which happened towards the end of my time in Africa. I had 5 days on the mountain with myself and the other people that were climbing with me. And at 15,000 feet, the night before the summit, it really all the pieces came together. And I saw that the future is sustainability, and that's the thing that I wanted to do. And so when I came back from Africa, that is what I've done ever since.
Wow. Well, I can't think of a better place than the top of Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
That's fabulous. Okay, so when you came back to the States, how did you start executing this plan?
Well, because it was the middle of the recession, or the very beginning of the recession, and this is 2007. So work was really hard to find. And even though I had a vision for things, I knew that I had to put that on the back burner for a little bit. So I ended up working with Parsons for the next 5 years with the FAA doing decommissioning projects. I worked with GSA on their high performance green building act through the stimulus package. And so I was able to, with a larger company, figure out how to implement sustainability within the structure of the federal government through business, figuring out how all those business aspects related. Meanwhile, I was running my company on the side and coaching individuals through sustainability, how to implement that, smaller scale nonprofits, smaller businesses that could really take advantage of that. But the movement was slow at first, so it wasn't something that could fully support me, but it's something that I still strongly believed in. So I was doing everything I could to be engaged with that and still be able to support myself.
Okay. Well, let's pull away from this fascinating storyline for just a minute and pick up on the theme of the show, which is that the majority of people, as you read, according to worldwide studies for 20 years by Gallup and others, show that, regrettably and profoundly, most people are not able to work in their sweet spot. When asked, are you doing the work that you love every day? Or are you doing work that uses your talents every day? 87% of people in the world say no, and 70-some percentage in this country say no, which is, had huge repercussions on them individually, of course, and their families, but also on the economy at large. What do you think that's about? As a person who's been driving forward, you've had your setbacks, for heaven's sakes, and this has not been easy, as is clear, but you've driven forward with what I call a vision and using your talents, and you're in the place, for the most part, that you want to be right now. Where do people get stuck?
I think people sometimes will take jobs or roles that they don't necessarily want to do in order to make money, in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the crux of our society is I think people end up doing what they need to do as opposed to what they want to do. And we, as people, end up getting complacent and stuck in certain situations because there aren't other opportunities, or we aren't seeking it, or we get defeated on some level. And that's a very human component, and it happens to all of us. It's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to you.
Yes, it has.
And so fighting through all of that, I think one of the things that allows me to continue to fight forward is I was in a car accident when I was 16. I almost died. I had a concussion. It was really bad. But when I came away from that, I was just like, if I have an opportunity to do something, I'm going to do it. And I'm not going to spend the time of my life sitting on the back burner saying, oh, I really wish I would go do this. I had to make things happen for me, which has caused a lot of trials and tribulations, and those are self-imposed. But I've lived the life that I wanted to live because I refused to not live my life that way.
Yes, precisely. Exactly right. So what would you say to people, Mike, that are out there? And you express it beautifully. You're right. I don't care who you are, the greatest athlete, the greatest writer, the greatest environmental impacts, anybody, professor, politician, we all go through those turning points, and sometimes they're brutally hard. So what would you say to people when they face those? How do they keep the vision and move forward in whatever way they can? What do they do?
Well, one of the things that I've tried to do, and this might sound really cliche, but is to find the happy. So if you're on a bus and it's up against a cliff and it's dark and dreary and the other side of the bus is facing out towards the valley, the sun is shining, you have this beautiful view. If you're sitting on that bus and that bus is life, you have a choice whether to focus on the dreary side of life or the happy side of life. So when I'm going through moments where it's difficult for me, having a cup of coffee in the morning makes me happy. So I focus on that first thing in the morning. I'm like, you know what? I love this cup of coffee. This is a good moment. So I start to train myself to think about the good things, the happy things, the moments that are positive and successful. And that then steers me in that positive, successful direction, as opposed to steering down in the other direction.
Yes, beautifully said. I love find the happy. I think that's quite eloquent. I haven't heard find the happy. That's really, yes, exactly right. And while you're finding that, you also find the unhappy, and that lets you know that you want, as you say, the bus is looking out on the dark side, you want to steer away from the unhappy and say, wait a minute, I don't have to put up with this. There's a way that I can figure out a strategy to be in the happy more than I'm not, right? There's almost always a way.
There is a way. Yeah. You just have to find it.
Right, exactly. Yep. Yeah, precisely. So have there been particular resources or individuals, books, films that have been inspirational to you that you could share with listeners around the world?
Actually, it's kind of an odd book for what I do, but Jared Diamond had Guns, Germs, and Steel. Have you heard of that book?
No, but I love the title.
Yeah, it's great because it talks about human history, world history, not in like the wars that we have had and the conquests that we have. It talks about the conquests, but it also talks about how Eurasia is very similar because it's along the same latitude. How bullets were allowed the Europeans to take over the Native American environment. And so it really gives a different perspective on human history and why Eurasia developed the way that it did. North America and Africa didn't. The animals that we had access to, the diseases, the quantities of people that went in different directions. So that book, and then he followed up with a book called Collapse. And Collapse is really interesting because it talks about the different elements of why certain civilizations have collapsed. The resources that we've had, we collated an environmental stress happens, and then we don't have the resources to maintain that population, and it disseminates. And if you look at those examples, Japan is 70% forested because they made decisions to preserve their environment 300 years ago.
Good heavens.
And so they've persisted in lieu of a potential civilization collapse that long ago because they set policies in place. And those two books are really interesting to me. And he's, I think, a fantastic writer because they juxtapose where we are as a civilization today, how we've gotten here. And then it gives you a little bit of insight of what we can do to be sustainable and really move ourselves forward.
I'm blown away by the statistic about Japan. And you say that's 250 years ago they made that strategic decision.
Yeah, the shogunate at the time was like, you can only use this so much wood to build this house, and this house. So it was, they set a whole bunch of rules and policies in place, which is something that we need to do today so that we can mitigate our impact on the environment.
Actually, we just interviewed a visionary named Steve Nygren, who has a whole hundreds or maybe thousands of acres below Atlanta called Serenby. And his vision, his and his wife's, is exactly that. They're doing the 70%. Isn't that interesting? And they've been doing that a handful of years. And so when I realized what the percentage was, I thought, can you imagine in the New York cities and the Chicago's and all, there's something to be said for them on some level, of course. But I think of mostly about concrete and steel and asphalt. And where's the joy in that?
Well, what's interesting is Washington, D.C. is about 46% tree canopy.
Okay.
And so I was actually working on a program where planting more trees. And so they had something called Play DC. So there's a playground within a 10-minute walking distance of every resident in the city.
Oh.
And in those parks, we have community garden. And as part of this tree planting grant to get closer to 48% tree canopy by 2020, we are planting fruit trees. And the fruit trees and the blueberry bushes and the mulberry bushes and almond trees and peaches and apples help alleviate food deserts and give people a connection to the environment. So there is a way that we can approach all of this, and the government can help support that and also improve that engagement with the natural environment. Even when we approach 70% of our population in an urban environment, we don't have to be completely urban.
Right. That's brilliant. That's just wonderful. I can't imagine how exciting that is to be a part of that. So what about this internet thing? You know, the internet is so amazing in so many ways. How do you use the internet in your life and in your business?
The internet has been, when I was in college, we still had to go to the bookshelves and look things up, and the periodicals and everything else. But then that started to transition, actually, while I was in university. So all the current periodicals would be in print and online. Right. So it's been interesting to be part of that transition to technology. And part of that transition is utilizing Instagram, Facebook, Twitter to communicate the message to other people and having that continual engagement and people being able to engage you in a platform and following the issues that they're interested in has been a great way that the movement and a lot of movements globally have been able to catapult forward and inject a lot of change faster than we could historically.
Yes, precisely.
The internet also offers, like, I can find so many resources. I don't have to have a book on every single subject that I focus on. When I'm looking up something specific, it allows me the opportunity to go in and look at a couple different perspectives that people are writing about so that I can help develop my own perspective and feed that back through social media or when I'm writing a paper or working on a project. The internet is an invaluable resource in terms of information.
Yes, utterly. So what's your vision going forward over the next few years?
My vision is to see sustainability grow. I actually spoke in front of Congress at the Energy Expo this past summer. There's an energy efficiency bill which has been turned down by Congress twice, and because they just don't see, they think that it's going to affect jobs. And I'm like, this is actually a jobs bill. Yes. We're looking at technology innovation. We're looking at building products and material resources. If we had an energy efficiency bill where we were focused on improving our energy efficiency, we're going to see tons of entrepreneurs, the tech industry, manufacturing industry, have to ramp up in order to support the demand of that policy that we put in place. We would be catapulting the United States forward. So a lot of what I've been working on is through the private sector. They get this. They're doing this. We are all doing this, and we're moving forward. We're looking at passive design strategies. You put a shade wall on the side of your building, it has a 10-year return on the investment. You reduce the size of your HVAC system by tons, and you reduce your upfront costs. You do line-to-line transfers of cost. So there's all these different techniques that we can incorporate to improve sustainability, improve efficiency. And the green tech industry is creating millions of jobs every year, and it's the largest growing sector right now.
Wow.
So I just want to continue to be part of this movement and echoing what we're doing, getting that information out to other people and investors, because this is the future. This is where we're going, and you can be part of it and develop your job sets, develop your education sets in order to be part of this future. So I really want to see people and help people get there.
Yes, I hear that, and I know you will. So what are you proudest of?
The thing that I'm proudest of is a quote that Gandhi had, and I usually keep it up in front of my computer, is be the change. And I feel like I have been the change and continue to be the change and help others echo that sentiment. So I see a sustainable future, and I continue to work towards that. And I think that's one of the things that I'm proudest of, is that I can be that change. It's funny, there's The Lorax is a book I used to read to the scouts.
Yes.
And one of the lines in there was, unless somebody cares a whole lot, nothing's going to change. It's not. And so I also have that right above my computer. I'm just like, keep on keeping on.
Yes, beautiful. Mike Dietrich, what a delight and pleasure being with you today. Thank you for sharing the highlights of your very fascinating journey. And I know that our listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on their journeys. So how do those listeners connect with you?
Well, my book is on Amazon, Renew and Sustain. That's one way of getting inside the mind of sustainability. And it's a really good introduction to it if you haven't had one. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as Renew and Sustain.
Okay, good. Excellent. So listeners know you can go to discovertalentpodcast.com to our homepage, click on podcast at the top, and go to the show notes. You'll find Mike Dietrich right there and get the highlights of this fine interview along with those connections. Thank you, listeners, all our listeners around the world, our growing tribe, for joining us today. You know that we have a ebook, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed? 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love, which is based on the thinking of real thought leaders from since the beginning of time to current thought leaders that can help you in wherever you are in your career journey. It's all free, and we hope it'll be a catalyst for you. Hope you enjoy it. You can also subscribe for free to this daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like the content, we'd love to have you part of our tribe and tell us how we can serve you better. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We do not learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.